All right, well, it's 10:04
officially, so let's get underway. You know, those who join in a bit later can catch up as we go. You know, this is a pretty darn good crew here. A lot of people who already have, in fact, except for me, you've all run booths. So there you go.
Well, you've kind of run booths.
Well, I just cruise the booths, and so that's a good reason for me to pretty soon hand it over to Nate Regeer, who has kindly offered to get us started today, because we have a lot of expertise in the room, so to speak, or on the screen, to talk about trade show ROI and possibly a little bit about tracking the results of trade shows. So, look, just to get us underway, and then I'll kind of hand over largely to Nate, and given the size of our group, which isn't too big, I don't think we'll need the chat room for questions. Just put your physically put your hand up. We can see you and we'll go to you. Apart from that, we are recording, so others will be able to hear what goes on today, because I know a bunch of people wanted to be here today, but they couldn't make it. Well, especially if they live in Europe, because it's, I don't know, 2 a.m.
That's asking much.
Yeah. So, Nate, why don't we start with you, please? And just before you get sort of running, tell us very quickly who you are and what you do.
Great, sure. Well, we're here today because of the last recording you did, Peter.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to make it, and I listened to it and was fascinated. And a couple times people referenced this topic of booth and presence and ROI, and several of you, we had talked. And so I kind of weighed in, and then you were kind enough to ask, you know, you want to facilitate something. So I'm happy to do that and glad to be here. I am the CEO of Next Element, and we are a leadership training firm based out of Kansas. Our newest product, the Compassion Mindset, you can see behind me, that's what we were promoting at ATD. And some of you that I met earlier probably are more familiar with our other product called Leading Out of Drama. And we're also a distributor for another model called the Process Communication Model. So we love being part of end-to-end and hearing how everyone else is tackling the issue of IP, monetizing IP around the world. And so I'm glad to be here and facilitate this. I'd love to hear from each of you about what your investment or interest is in being here today on this call, so that we can really tap into the wisdom in the room and see how we can make it most valuable.
Sounds good to me. We can go around as I see on my screen. Maybe start with Mr. Rebilliard.
All right. So I'm Mark Rebilliard from Color Accounting, one of the co-founders. And I think we first exhibited in Chicago about 12 or 14 years ago. It tends to go on a cycle around these major events. And we were clueless and lost and had a great time. And we used the scanning apparatus provided, you know, they sell to you, and it was a mess. And it really didn't do a lot of good other than we thought we were pretty cool for being there. So that was good. And since then, we've sporadically jumped in and out of this model. We've been in for the last 2 or 3 years, and we're about to jump out again. And I'm really interested to hear, Nate, what you've got to say about that, because my suspicion is that's probably not a good way to go. But when I'm dealing, our firm's full of accountants and they just look at numbers, and it's very hard to point at anything concrete. Very easy to point at cash going out the door. That's the easiest thing to point out. But it's very hard to say, well, we got that gig from being in Denver 3 years ago. Sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not. So we're kind of novices, kind of done a few. But
yeah.
Okay, thanks, Mark. I'll jump down to Eric, another experienced exhibitor. If you've got anything to add or there to...
Well, let's see, I just had to unmute myself. The only thing I was going to say is the reason I wanted to come is I'm always looking for any particular tidbits or new information that might be useful as another way of thinking about it. We've been doing ATD since I started with the company. So that was 18 years. And we just always felt that once there, we had to keep doing it. We've done other trade shows as well along the way, some of which we just felt didn't have an ROI or that we didn't leverage it correctly to turn it around. And it was just, so we ended up, you know, I'm here because I'm always looking for something else that might, a different way of looking at it.
Well, it's a, you know, the first time or maybe the first few times, simply showing up and actually having an exhibit and being at this place is incredible. It's like, that's an accomplishment in and of itself, let alone how to maximize ROI. Kim, hi.
Hi. Hi.
Welcome.
Hey, Kim.
And here's Kim. Yeah.
Yes. Hey, Eric. Hi. I can only be on for a little while, but I thought I'd join for a bit. Yeah.
We're doing some introductions, and I believe Jim is next.
All right. My name's Jim. You can call me Jimbo if you prefer, but either way is fine with me. This was, well, I guess my product is called The Box, or Thinking In and Out of the Box. It's a physical box you stick on your head to help you take it off your head so you can be more creative. It was my first ATD, was my first trade show, my first time to have a booth. So I am a true novice. I am here to be the sponge.
I'm curious, Jimbo, what was being a novice your first time, what was like the biggest awesome surprise and the biggest scary surprise?
I think the awesome surprise for me was how many times people told me I was a genius. just the novelty of the product is different, and people were really attracted to the physical aspect of it, and they really, they got it very quickly. And so the positive feedback around the concept part of it. I live in Taiwan. I work a lot in China. I mean, the scary surprise is always when five Chinese guys walk up. and, you know, to a certain degree, I've got an advantage in that I speak Chinese, and one of my salespeople speaks Chinese, and my wife is Chinese, and so we can deal with them at the Chinese level. But I think the scary surprise is I know I'm not really ready systems-wise. I know I'm not really ready, in terms of leveraging for the world stage. I mean, it probably would have been smarter to get my ducks in a row, but I didn't. So that's the scary part is, well, now I'm out there. And last night I was talking to somebody in Dubai and talking to somebody in Chile and talking to somebody in Maryland, all from this, and thinking, oh my God, talking to someone in China yet the day before, you know, how do I actually connect and answer questions that I have no idea are coming at me now that I'm in the conversation part. Exactly. That's the scary part.
And how else would you have known?
Yeah. No, perfect timing. I'm 56. I got to start sometime.
Yeah, give it a crack.
Yeah.
I keep saying I'm going to, but I'm
not awesome. Sure. Is Jenna next? Peter, on your screen? Is that where we go next?
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So I work with Box of Crayons. So we're a coaching training company. Personally, I've only been at ATD the last 2 years. But I think our founder was a couple more times before that, just on his own speaking. So really, I think it was Mark that said 14 years ago, you were clueless. That's me right now. So I'm really just looking for any insight. And also, I think someone else, Eric, maybe had said, you were talking about, do you just keep showing up year after year after year? And right now, I think that's what we wanted to keep doing, but we really need to see maximize it. Yep. So yeah, just looking to learn more.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a strong pet, a drug that ATD pedal.
Oh, that's great. Yep. Awesome.
Thanks, Jenna. Mr. Schenk, you're next. And Kim, if you want to mute your microphone at any time, you're welcome to. If you've got a bit of a coughing fit down there, I noticed.
No.
There is a button
for bottom left. You
can't find the mute.
bottom left.
Oh, there it is.
Okay.
May I help? Can I help you?
Okay, Mr. Schenk, you're up next.
Okay, so I'm Mark Shanks, our Managing Director of Anecdote. Business leaders communicate more effectively, salespeople sell more, making strategies stick. I'm based in Melbourne, and we have exhibited at ATD. This is, so 2019 was our third year. I had been to ATD twice before as a participant and kind of walked the expo floor. We exhibit for three reasons. We exhibit to build the brand of Anecdote and our products in North America and globally, to get sales and to find partners. And the first year we exhibited independently in a 10 by 20 booth. And the second and third years we exhibited with two other companies, Mark Revilliard, Color Accounting, and John Gornstein for Sonar Global, where we took a 20 by 20 island booth with the idea that the island booth has more visibility. And yeah, so I guess I've got some thoughts on those things. Yeah. And I'm keen to understand how to get a much better ROI from the investment that we make in exhibiting at ATD.
Mark, we met your first year when you had the 10 by 10 and we borrowed some scissors from you.
It was a 10 by 20.
10 by 20, okay.
10 by 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the famous pair of scissors incident.
He was surprised that we brought it back and he thought maybe he could trust us.
Yeah, but I mean, think about that moment. And I'll just share briefly what happened. So Sunday afternoon, everyone's setting up their booth. You know, my first time setting up a booth, I was there with one of my team members, and a random bloke comes over and says, can we borrow your scissors? And we brought these scissors all the way from Melbourne, and was like,
these are gold.
And said, yep, sure, just bring them back. And so, you know, because Nate and his team, they were doing leading out of drama at that stage, and they had boxes and shit of just so much stuff. And so then Nate came back and bought the scissors, and we had a bit of a chat. And from that, I've met some, like, you know, Paul Larkin, he's based here in Melbourne. Anyway, it's been like that pair of scissors instance. Like, I guess that is one of the reasons that Nate's actually on this call.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yep.
All right, yep. Number one, bring scissors.
Yeah.
There's my first takeaway.
Yeah. Only 17 minutes in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's keep rocking then, Nate. I think Kim is probably represented by Eric, unless you want to throw in a quick point there. No, okay.
Eric's okay. Got it.
You're off on a wild night, yeah.
Well, I was going to wing it, and then Peter said, if you have slides, are you willing to share them? And I thought, oh, gosh, I need to have slides. We actually, our company, we spend a lot of time thinking about this and working on this, and we've been exhibiting for probably 16 or 17 years, average of about 3 trade shows a year of different sizes. And we've been doing national or international shows for about 6 years. And so I thought, well, I might put together just a little framework for what are all the factors to consider and see if you think that it's a roadmap that we could follow and kind of just put the pieces on as we go. So I'm going to share my screen here.
I love it.
Can you see that there?
Yep, got it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So some of the areas that we pay attention to, I'll just go through these real quick and then we can see if this is a good template. Target market is important. There's some more I'd like to say about that, and maybe we can talk about trade shows are valuable if you can reach your target market or if it helps you reach your target market. So that's a key decision. Goals are really important. You know, we were joking about simply showing up and actually having an exhibit is probably a pretty big goal for the first time. But setting specific goals, we're spending a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of investment. And so having goals is something we think about. We also pay a lot of attention to our presence and promotional package. Like, how are we going to show up? And trade shows offer lots of different ways to partner with the organization for different kinds of presence, whether it's the size of the booth or whether it's additional marketing or promotional stuff. So that's something to consider. We pre-show strategy isn't something we started paying attention to until about 4 years ago, that you would even do anything before you show up. And then there's, I like to call it propaganda and swag. This whole thing about what do you actually give people or have at your booth when people show up. I remember going to a trade show, an expo, and it was back in the day when people spent tons of money on all kinds of free crap. And there was a mother that came through with three children and a wagon. And she was just dumping stuff off of booths into her thing. And people were giving away stuff that would probably cost $3 to $6 a piece back in those days. So that whole issue about, you know, you watch how different vendors, what do? How do they try to get people in?
Yeah.
Lead capture and booth behavior is another category about a lead. What is a lead? We go there to get leads. You know, Mark, you said one of your purposes is sales. So you're trying to get leads. How do you capture them? And then how do we behave? What is our behavior at our booth? And that's something that's been very important to us as a team is how are we going to act? Booth design, we have opportunities to build and design and create whatever it is that we want to show up with. And so there's also an opportunity to affect ROI. And then finally, post-show strategy. What do we do after the fact? I'm curious if this list resonates or captures areas that might be important for us to talk about.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yep,
good.
I'm good with all of it.
All right. Well,
I'm not good at any of it.
Well, I'll just hit them one at a time and throw out some stuff. I'm going to jump way ahead, though, and give you a quick case study here. So I want to show you our booth from 2016 was the first time we exhibited at ATD International Conference. This is our booth. We had this thing custom made by a museum exhibit designer. The entire thing is built from scratch to our specs. It took us like a million hours to put together. And it's all made of natural wood and aluminum and dye sublimated fabrics and all this crap. And here was the performance. So that year we spent $60,000 to be there. That's the cost of the booth design. We had the premium platinum sponsor package, which was over $30,000. I think the booth cost us 10 or 15 to build. It cost us another 10,000 to just be there with hotel rooms and everything. We brought 9 people. And we were the newcomer of the year. We were awarded the newcomer of the year because we had the highest traffic and engagement at our booth of any newcomer. And so we thought we were all that. And there was so much traffic, we could not keep up with 9 staff full time. We could not keep up with the people wanting to talk to us. And we generated 375 leads. We had the lead capture, you know, the electronic thing, and we're scanning badges. And we went cheap, so of the 9 of us, only 4 had scanners. So we're borrowing each other's scanners all the time. It was crazy. We gave away a free assessment. We gave away debriefs. We gave away free books. And we averaged, one of our metrics was quality of conversations. We averaged about 20 minutes a person for conversations. No wonder 9 of us couldn't keep up. Mm. We generated lots of buzz. We gave away like 100 copies of my new book, and we had 0 ROI in the first 12 months. 0. So $60,000 investment, and by all measures, it was like an ultra successful trade show, and we had 0 ROI. 24 months later, $20,000 after 24 months. So that's 1/3. And so we're like, we're never going back. This is the stupidest thing we've ever done. But one of the decisions we made early on, way back before we even started Next Element, was always give it 3 years, because you never know until you learn, you adapt, you have to give it time. And so our commitment has always been any trade show we do, we're going to do it 3 years in a row. So that fast forward 4 years to May of this year, this is our booth design. And here's the statistics. We invested $35,000, which is $25,000 less. We had a 20 by 20 island booth like some of you. We managed traffic with only 6 people, only 175 leads. No swag. We didn't give anything away. We only averaged 5 minutes per conversation. Lots of buzz. And 1/3 of our leads we're already in conversation with. And we are now talking to 2 Fortune 500 companies about engagements that could be anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000. And it's the best potential we've ever seen. Some of it could be attributed to the branding, but a lot of it has to do with how we've applied our metrics and learned over the 4 years. But only 175 leads, and we didn't give anything away. And we had no sponsorship. So I wanted to share that to say there's so many lessons we can all learn together. And maybe when we put our heads together, we can kind of see what happened. But that's where we went through. I'm curious if anybody has any questions or comments about that. Or just
that really resonates, mate. Yeah, that just makes total sense that they're getting focused around what is important and what's less important. And, you know, giveaways. First year we had tons of giveaways. And really, it's attracting the wrong sort of attention.
Right.
Yeah. So we deliberately don't scan. We tell people we don't scan and tell them why we don't scan, which is because we don't want to be one of the 10,000 emails they get on the Monday after the trade show. So how can we get around that? And that leads to a different avenue of connection. Often they'll give you a business card at that point where normally they wouldn't give it to if you had a gun on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so Mark, you have to follow up. So what do you do?
We follow up that day. So any lead we get that day, we within, you know, by 4 p.m., 5 p.m., we've emailed them. It hasn't been super successful. I thought that would be the golden bullet, but it's been better. And we've got through the no pass zone where they basically you're sending emails to an email account that's never going to get you through there. So we're communicating with people and they're saying, look, you know, A's happen, B's happen, but at least we're talking with the person. Whereas before we've just gone, it's just gone silent straight away.
And Mark Schenck, they take, Mr. Rabilia takes notes, I think, on each conversation. And
so we make notes in a book we call the special book. We try everything we can to make them know that we're actually serious about contacting. So we get the special book, we write in it in front of them and ask them, how do you want me to contact you? And we write it down right in front of them. I almost want to get them to sign it, but, you know, that's probably too much.
So I really like that question. How would you like us to contact you? That's a great question.
Mm-hmm. We learned all kinds of things with that question this year. Some people said, don't talk to me for 6 weeks. Some people said, I've turned off my email for 4 weeks, so I won't even recognize your address until such and such. You know, some people said, I want to follow you on Facebook right now. And I think that personalization and asking them to be in charge of that relationship or to weigh in, aligning those expectations relationship by relationship is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's recognizing what's going to happen. Like they know they're going to get a bunch of emails because everybody scans everybody. You know, there's a game afoot. And if you can say, well, we acknowledge the game, but we don't want to talk to you through that. We want to come around this way. And it definitely made a difference.
So our strategy is we don't scan anyone unless we think that they're a strong lead. Like first year, we're just scanning anyone. Like, oh, look at this, we've got 500.
That's the metric.
Complete, absolute waste of time. So we only had about 125 leads that we scanned this year. And about 90 of them, I wrote personal emails to. right?
That's a big effort, mate.
Talking about the conversation that we had, the thing that they were interested in, and so far I've had one response.
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. Yeah. So
let's take a look at some strategies. One of the things that, and I'm kind of jumping around here, but a lot of it has to do with the goals that we set. Like, what kind of leads do we want? And the mistake that we made several years is we thought that the number of leads was the key. That was our metric. But yeah, it's not. It's really the number of the kind of leads that we want. And so getting ultra specific on what is our perfect target market, what is the kind of lead we want, it changes how we talk to people. It changes even how we construct our booth and how we do our messaging, because 8 out of 10 people that walk up to our booth are not, they really should be moving on. And there's no need for us to work so hard to try to capture their lead. So I think getting clear about that is so important. We moved from length of conversation to the efficiency of the conversation at getting us clarity about, is this a lead? Do they want to talk to us? Do they sufficiently understand our product that they'll remember us later? And so getting our conversation down to 5 minutes, we're doing them a favor too. Because have you ever been trapped at a booth with a great salesperson that won't let you leave? And you have a list of booths you want to visit. And so it's, I don't think it's respectful to the expo goer to try to hold them up. The more efficient we can have that conversation, everybody wins. And I don't know if you experienced this. We had people coming to our booth that had a list. They had done their research. They wanted to visit all these booths, and there was not sufficient time at ATD for people. They were complaining they didn't have enough time in the expo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So efficiency of the conversation just seems really important. And several of you have spoken to how important it is that we have a contract with that person about, so where do we go from here? What do you want from me? How can I do this? Not just I'm dumping you into a campaign that's going to, you know, try to sell to you for the next 6 weeks.
That point on efficient conversations, Jimbo, at ATD, you said, one of the early things you said to me was, wow, I just have to ask everyone, do you want the 15-second explanation or the 3-minute? And that for me was like, yeah, that's really important.
So guys, I need to leave because I have a call I need to make, but it's been fun to see you. And I know Eric will share everything from our point of view, and I'll hear about it tomorrow or soon. So it's a great, great idea to have this meeting, and really helpful to have it so soon after the session. So thank you.
All right. Great to see you.
Ciao.
Just to jump on that, Mark, what I started doing towards the end was, because our booth was so different, people would kind of walk by and they'd have this look and they'd look up and down, you know, and so then I'd say, are you curious? And they'd say, yeah, I'm curious. And so then I'd say, I'd give them like the 20-second overview. And then I'd say, would you like to know more? And maybe 30% said, no, I got it. I said, great, you know. And then at the end, I would always ask, would you mind if I scanned you instead of just scanning? I said, but this thing of how would you like us to contact you? I mean, it takes 10 seconds on the scanner after you scan them in to type in, you know, email, telephone call, whatever, you know, timing, this kind of stuff. I think that's the next level of personalizing it with them. I think that's really, really a great step.
Right, and the lead capture is getting more sophisticated and more customizable, so you can do that. Yeah. And some of the lead capture that they offered this year, you can even apply tags and a variety of other things, and even do automated responses. Like once you scan the badge, it automatically emails them something if you want it to. So I want to jump ahead here to something that several of you have said about be a curious and competent guide. Let them be the hero. And I think that's something that we're coming around to realizing as we get more sophisticated in sales, that our job is not to save them. Our job is to be a guide, and we have a solution, but they're the hero. And so I'm kind of, you might be hearing StoryBrand in my messaging, but people love it when you're curious. And we made a commitment in our team that we're never going to answer a question with content, because they are the ones that want to be asked questions. And so we started coming up with, how could we come back with a question instead and us be the curious ones instead of them? And it completely changed the conversation. Like people would say, so what do you do? And we would say, I'm curious, what drew you in?
Yeah.
And they would just start talking. So tell me about yourself. And we'd say, I'd love to hear about your job and how you see, you know, why you're standing here, or what you're interested in, or what the show has done for you. And it was great.
Could I just throw out a crazy idea? This, everybody gets a body cam.
Hey.
Right? And you can scan back and forth. And you could actually go back to that conversation because you've got it in order. You know, you can do it by sort by order. You can go back and you can actually see exactly what they said without having to take notes.
Yeah. We did take selfies with people and sent them the selfie in the email with the explanation. And while this was
so cool,
mainly for us, they didn't care. That really helped to remember who we were.
That's cool. Yeah. One of the challenges that we faced is segmenting your leads. Do we want to categorize them based on different, you know, how hot are they? Are there different products they want? Do we do that on the spot or we do it later? And that's been something that we have experimented with. I don't know that we have a best practice or even if there is one. I'm curious if any of you have, how you've dealt with that.
Well, so for us, we only scanned people that we thought were strong leads. So we were trying to filter very hard. And so if we did scan somebody, then I want to know what product are they interested in. Storytelling for leaders, storytelling for sales, being a partner, being a corporate partner, kind of in terms of like... related to our objectives of being there. So are we talking to them about selling them SFL?
Right.
And so, we would type scan, and then I would go SFL, strong prospect, possible partner. And that's just try and capture that. But, I mean, that's pretty rudimentary. I was interested in what you were saying, Nate, about... I'm pretty sure we didn't make the most of the lead capture system, and we can probably automate some of that.
It's an interesting thing. We deliberately reduced the number of leads we'd capture. We took about 30 on the basis that, we talked to a lot more people than that, but there was about 30 on the basis. Well, how many can we seriously manage and remember and be authentic with, and whether that's going to play out. I think we've done better than last year where we took about 70. But I think, I don't know where that ends. I mean, is 5 a better answer? Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're still toying with that, because definitely having 900 the first year we did it was not a good answer. Yeah. We were just making a problem for ourselves that made us look stupid.
We had a good friends of ours were exhibiting close to us on the second year, and one of them had just published a new book, and they brought 500 copies of the new book, a free copy to the first 500 people that we can scan your badge. And they thought they were so great. And they were bragging about how many leads they were getting. And then a month later they called us and they said, oh my gosh, this has been miserable. Wading through these leads, because it kind of gets to this. I don't know if this is nice. Oh yeah, here's the don't trade meaningless stuff for meaningless leads. And they thought that was the cool thing, and their rationale was, oh, they'll get the book, they'll read it, and then they'll call us. It's no, they came for a free book. They didn't come because they're interested in your stuff. So they stopped doing that. Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. We haven't had much to give away, really. We, you know, just sort of stupid stuff, really. But the first year we exhibited, we had bowls of this and that, and just got wiped out by hordes on day one and had nothing left after that. And then we thought, there's a balance between, you need people around your booth, otherwise it looks like, you know, something's going on if there's no one there. Danger. But yeah, exactly. So we had some crazy giveaway things. Like, we had these badges that we got made to put on some devices years ago that we still had a couple of hundred of them left. So we pretended they were golf ball markers and we gave them away, and that created a conversation that was completely irrelevant, but it had energy going on and people coming up without fear because there was stuff going on. So I don't know where that goes, but it was just something we've done each year since then.
So on the issue of, so we had swag. I took about 90 copies of our book. And so we gave a copy of the book to strong leads. So where we thought this is a genuine possibility, we went behind the counter and grabbed the book and said, this is
made a fuss. Yeah.
And so only.
Yeah, that's really important. I want to add that because while we're talking here, because I think we can't just say don't give stuff away, but special.
Yeah, be specific.
Yeah. Could I'd like to share a story of my great idea that I didn't do. So this is what I called the promotional box. So if you've seen my stuff before, it's a box you stick on your head. Yeah. It's the exact same thing as the box that I sell, but on the inside is the messaging, right? But then the feedback that I got was, I'm actually giving too much. So my idea, and maybe I'll try this next time, but my idea was, I'm going to give you this box, and if you take a picture of yourself and send it to me with the box on your head, then you'll go for a lucky draw or something like that. And then inside is the whole story. But the feedback that I got from other people, and this was like my partners, the other certified facilitators, were like, boy, you really want to give them the whole, you know, physical thing? And, you know, and so I chickened out and I paid somebody to cut it in half. And so I only gave this part, you know, I gave this piece of it, which had the contact info and the front, but not the whole box. I don't know. But I think one of our things that we decided early on is we only give something that is a message. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's the name card that looks like a box or whatever, everything should be message oriented, as opposed to here, get some juggle balls or whatever, rather than branding oriented.
Our thing is not giving them anything that other people give. Like, they'd say, have you got a brochure? We'd make a thing around it. Well, we don't do the brochure thing. It's going to end up being a huge weight around your neck and you're not going to look at it. So here we had this, which was just a huge brochure, other things that would stand out.
Yeah, I was surprised how many people said, I can't carry stuff. I don't, if you have anything, it either has to be very small or can it be digital? Mm-hmm. And so that's the world we live in now. And people are so inundated with messaging and content that something that's memorable and simple. Our problem the first year, if you remember our booth design, is we tried to talk about everything that we did. And it was way too complicated, way too much stuff going on, way too hard to help people see what really was going on. And this year it was one single message with a single word.
Yeah.
And it was within 10 or 15 seconds, we were having a strong conversation already.
Did you use QR codes to give people digital connection?
We have done that in the past. We've used QR codes to have them sign up for things or get free assessments or whatever. It's sort of easy, but you know, not everyone's QR reader works, and then it takes time. And
Hey, Nate, is it inappropriate or is it okay to share what that 10 or 15 seconds was when you first started talking to someone who walked by your booth?
Yeah, it is. So the word compassion is everywhere, and it's the only word. Before, when we had leading out of drama, build your culture of compassionate accountability, people didn't know if they were coming because they don't want drama or because they want more compassion or they need to be more accountable or they hate conflict. And all of them were important for us, but we had to pick one. And so people would come into our booth and say, they would just be standing there looking around and we'd say, I'm just so curious who brought you in. She goes, they would say compassion. And then we'd ask them, what's your understanding of compassion or what is it about compassion that's compelling for you? And they would just start talking. And then we could find where we resonated. And so the corner panels you see, each one of them is a story. And it's people would move around and stand by the story that talked to them. And then we would just talk about their life and about, you know, why that resonated with them. And it was just great conversations.
Okay. Thank you. So that's all about like simplifying that message and then having that opening question, that curiosity question.
Yeah. The way our booth was structured here is it's a triangle each corner, and the two sides that face out are about storytelling and emotions and resonance with people's pain. And inside is all about the technical aspects of the tool and the model. So if people were compelled emotionally to walk in and there was a connection, then we could stand with them and talk. And if we ever needed to point to something, we could say, and over there, those are the three components of our model, or over here is the four steps if you want to get certified. But that was just technical. And that only became relevant if people were just really drawn in by the story.
I've got a question.
Hey, Terry.
Hi. Sorry for joining late. I had to respond to an email. And if this question was answered earlier, just ignore it. But from what I've heard, the theme seems to be to scan fewer people, only the qualified lead, right? Now, this seems to go against what marketing people would say, which is you create a large database and you send them in a newsletter or something every so often, whatever it is, once a month, once a quarter, so that they are reminded of you. So like Mark said, the first year you had 900 and now you have reduced it to whatever that number is. Wouldn't it be lost to your database and to a potential future buy maybe 3 years down the road?
Absolutely.
Sounds like there's a question in there somewhere.
Well, there is a question. Why shrink your database by not scanning people who might not be a lead today, but who might be a lead 2 or 3 years down the road?
Can I jump in there, Nate? Just while you were thinking through that, we had sort of two options on that, Terry. So we had the physical book that we made a fuss of handwriting their details in we considered them one of the 50, turned out to be 30.
Yeah.
And for anyone else that we said, well, look, you know, you don't want us to hassle us, but if you want to stay connected and see what happens in the future, scan this QR code, and they've got them on our newsletter list. Mm. That way, you know,
We only cut ours in half from about 375 to 175. And the reason we do that is because the integrity of our email list is way, way higher. And we get graded and judged. We use Infusionsoft. It's very important that our leads are happy and they're not upset with what we do. And so we're very, very careful with how we treat our leads. And unsubscribes count against us. We don't want that. Mm-hmm. And we also found that a large number of our leads from the first year didn't recognize us. They unsubscribed. They weren't even happy that we were contacting them. They didn't remember coming to our booth. And we don't want to piss people off, basically. And so we try to find a happy medium between those two.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying.
Mm.
Yeah. So,
hi, it's Jacqueline. I just wanted to jump in on something that Nate had talked about earlier about focusing in on the word compassion. And I've done three big events back to back, sort of between March, April, and May. And in this last event we just did in Baltimore, Washington, we spent a tremendous amount of time kind of deciding what to say in those first 10 to 15 seconds. And instead of worrying about all our different differentiators and instead of worrying about all the different things, we chose one thing that we thought this audience would want to hear about. And for sure, out of the three events, this has been by far our most successful. You know, people knew right away whether it was worth continuing the conversation or not. And I that was a huge lesson learned. And so I just wanted to kind of underscore what Nate was saying. I was really exhausted, you know, by the time I got there on how much time we'd spent on these 15, 30 seconds, but really it was super worth it. Like to just really have a single message for that audience and to just let it sit and really focus the conversations where it resonated.
I cannot emphasize, that enough. I agree. And we had a line that we all swore, no matter what anybody says, we're going to say the same first line. And our first line was, leaders want to make a difference, but they're often drained by people problems. And we committed, no matter what they say, I don't care if they come in and say, so what do you do? Or how old are you? It didn't matter. The first thing we would say is that, and they would just melt. And instantly we knew whether there was going to be a conversation or not. And whether it was kind of within them to resonate with that, and they'd be like, okay, great. And they'd walk away, or they would just kind of melt and walk in.
What's the question again, Nate? That you asked
our opening line for compassion was leaders want to make a difference, but they're often drained by people problems.
Okay.
And that connected with every single person. Either they resonated or clearly our product was not for them. And it was a litmus test that clarified the leads so quickly. And you could see it on their faces. People that would have nothing to do with compassion or people skills, they would just walk away. Mm. And we were happy for that. No need pestering them.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Jacqueline, could you share what yours was?
Well, what we didn't have sort of a standard line, but what we knew, we were speaking to, you know, very large organizations who would already have had an employee engagement provider, right? Like they would definitely have already had that. So we decided to go in and just talk about our individual reporting and how that was their missing piece and how we could integrate. So it was individual reporting, the missing piece, like kind of like connecting the dots and integration. So it was like one message and, you know, we might have said it different ways, but that was the single message. And it was really interesting. Like I was speaking to Nationwide and I just started off by saying, because we have to just sort of like we do employee engagement and we specialize. And then she cut me off and she said, well, we use Gallup. And I said, oh, yes, I'm sure you do have a provider, but we focus on the individual level and we do individual reporting. And she looked at me and she said, oh, tell me more. And at the end of the conversation, she said, you know, thank you for pushing back. And she called over her senior VP and we continued the conversation. So, you know, it was interesting because I was single-minded about the message I wanted to get across. I wasn't at all thrown off when she said, oh, well, we use Gallup.
Yeah.
It didn't throw me off at all because I had my message that I knew could resonate. And we just had a great trade show. I've never had a great trade show. honestly, never. And this was, and it was all about just being really clear on what I had that was different from what they were currently using and just sticking to that.
Well, and that, you know, that kind of gets to how you define your target market. And in that moment, you had so clearly defined that one of your target markets is people who are using a competitive tool who don't know that we do individual reporting. And so you were ready for that because it's the target market. And getting so clear about who those people are allows you to be ready for them and then not waste your time and energy on the others.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And then using a keyword like integration, like we integrate. So you don't have to choose. It's not about Gallup or us, right? It's about... Right. It's, and we had sorted all that out, and I had to do a 30-second video as part of this trade show. And, you know, 30 seconds, you know, we talk about think on your feet, but I'm telling you, 30 seconds goes by really fast. but it was so good to do. And I mean, I honestly, there were times when, you know, we were working on this and we were refining it and getting feedback. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to slip my wrist. But I'm so glad we did it. I am, because just as Nate was saying, I was ready for everything. Like it was really quite something. Just how comfortable I was. And I had fun. This was probably the first trade show I've actually had fun at.
How about we take a brief look at how do we get clear about that target market? Because to be able to be at that moment where you were, Jacqueline, you had to do a lot of work. You know, and part of this is, you know, for us, how can we justify spending $60,000 or $50,000 or $20,000? Once we get clear about our target market, the question is, will they be there? And our big problem with ATD is it's such a mishmash. And our target market is there, mixed in among a whole bunch of distractions. And so we decided that there, you know, if we're going to get 1,000 people coming by our booth in 3 days, how many of those people fit our target market? And is it worth it? And will they be there? And then are they decision makers? I think that's, we all ask ourselves that question about, or are they just gathering information? Or are they just, you know, they got delegated to go this year and bring back everything they learned? Or are they like my sister-in-law who works for McKinsey and she goes with a mission to find the next tool that they're going to use for this initiative? So how do we discern that really quickly? And then why are they there? You know, the people that are just coming by with their bags open, ready to pick up the swag, you know why they're there. Oh, oops. These are some of the questions we ask ourselves when we start to decide, is our target market, how are we going to decide whether this place is the place for us? Any other comments or input on that?
There's also the people that actually go to learn something. I mean, they're not there for the expo at all.
Yeah,
they came to ATD because they want to learn something, but they're still walking around the expo. Yeah. That's a whole other. And then the other thing I found is how, yeah, I think maybe 25% I'm not really good at numbers, so I'll just lie and say it's 27%. 27% of the people that we scanned actually were people that were there on a trade show. I mean, they're quote unquote competitors.
Yeah,
other vendors who are just walking around, looking around, seeing what else is going on, right? And so there are other vendors. So, it's really an interesting, which I think is part of the nice thing of the scanner is it allows me to kind of go through and dissect a little bit. It lets you know, are they there on a on what package are they there at the show for? So we went through and we looked at everybody that was there as an exhibitor, and we put them into a different group. Yeah. It doesn't mean they're not great leads, because I'm looking for partners and these might be fantastic partners, but then in how we communicate with fellow exhibitors might be different than others. And were they there on a student discount? Were they there just for the trade show, but not the exhibition? Were they there on the full package? I think These allow you to have a little bit of a different imagination about who this person is before you contact them. So I was actually very impressed with the amount of data that was available from the scanner, other than just name and company and email.
That's cool. It's cool. Yeah.
Hey, this is a perfect end-to-end conversation, or for me as host especially. I just introduce all of you and I get the hell out of the way, which has been fantastic. I love it. Technically, I don't know, Ruff, we have about 2 minutes left. If people want to get off the call on the hour, this is a huge topic though. I think we could go for hours on this stuff. This is really rich. I'm loving listening to this. This is really good.
Yeah.
So I don't know, what does the group feel? Do we want to go for an extra 15 minutes or so? Or do we want to wrap it up there and do another one at some point in time? Or do it in April at end-to-end? I don't know. What's the feeling?
Look, I'm going to head off thank everyone for their time. Hey, Nate, that awesome job putting that deck together.
Brilliant. Oh, thanks.
So good. Man. Thank you.
Pete, I think on that question, I'll hang around. I think also if we could schedule one before the next ATD, like a month out or 2 months out or something, just as a refocuser for people who might be thinking, am I doing it or not? Or I am doing it. What the hell am I in for?
Yeah, great idea. Yeah. Nate, I should ask, Nate, are you okay to stick around another 10 or 15 minutes just to share?
Yeah, sure. Sure, okay. I'm okay to do that. And also, if we want to schedule another one to continue, or I love the idea of something maybe 3 or 4 months out of ATD where we could start helping each other plan.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, awesome. And how far out should that be, do you think?
That's a tough question.
I'm
right about the time you're in Singapore, isn't it?
No, I mean, how far out from a show? Like how many months?
It's in Denver.
Two months. I think any less than that,
it's got to be at least 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less than 2 months, you're already in the throes.
Yeah, we start 4 to 6 out with our strategy.
Yeah, I was going to say 4 to 6 as well. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's November. December,
right? Yeah.
Okay. January. Well, that was actually going to be one of the questions I was going to ask, was how far ahead do you start planning and preparing for a trade show? It sounds like roughly 6 months.
Well, I guess we could hit a couple more of these topics if we want to in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah. If we can get a couple more down and I can edit out some of the fluff that we've had and try and make it an hour long, roughly podcast for people to listen to. I think that'll be valuable. There's no fluff, Eric, no fluff. And then, that'll stimulate perhaps a conversation that can be done, electronically or otherwise we get back on here again. But let's just see. Let's just keep going. And for those who need to drop off, just drop off. Let's not make too much of a fuss about it. We'll see you next time. Thanks for being here. Otherwise, Nate, let's just keep rolling.
Yeah. Can I just make one observation before I drop off?
Yep.
And that is that Nate talked about clarity of messaging, and certainly that's something that I've taken away from the last 2 years, this year in particular, where we had an island booth 20 by 20, 3 different companies, and Mark Revilliard, please feel free to jump in on this. What I noticed very early on is that it was a bad idea having a 3 company. And the reason it's a bad idea is because people are going, what's this, right? It was like, is this Persona Global? Is it Color Accounting? And so we're not doing that. We won't ever be doing that again, because we want our message to be really clear. Stories are powerful. We can help you do that. We can help you apply that power, that sort of thing. And we diluted the clarity of our messaging by trying to do too much in an island booth. And so we kind of, Nate, you've been working towards clarity of messaging. The construct of our booth really didn't contribute to that. And I just noticed people looking up and going, I don't get it.
Next.
Just to clarify for those who are going to listen to this podcast and not here to actually see it, just to clarify, you guys had 3 different sort of brands, if you like, on one island booth.
3 companies.
Yeah, and you've done that for a couple of years now, and your choice for next year, Mark Schenk, is to not do that again. It sort of diluted it too much. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, one of the things for us is setting goals. Peter, you'd asked about metrics, and we really push ourselves to establish metrics for how are we going to measure our goals for the trade show, and those metrics have to be leading indicators. And so they can't be lagging indicators and they can't just be numbers. And so if we're going to measure something, we feel like we should be setting goals and measuring something that is an actual leading indicator of business. And so not just number of leads, but a lead that fits this criteria, because we know that when they fit that criteria, they're very likely to respond to a follow-up email, for example. Or this year, we were very clear that our target market is companies over 1,000 employees. They had these kinds of criteria. They had an internal training department. It was very specific. And then at that point, everything we do serves the goals, everything. The sponsorship package we choose, the messaging, the pre-messaging, the way we talk at the booth, the way we capture leads, everything serves the goal. Otherwise, things just get crazy. That's kind of where we've been at with goals. And we're getting better each year, but we tend to slip. We let ourselves get messy, and we're not disciplined. And then we just start getting leads that aren't that helpful, or people are confused. And
yeah. Can you, those metrics, you don't know that when you're talking to someone at the actual booth, do you? Like,
no, but we had, we have training for all of our booth staff. So we have like a cheat sheet that says, here's kind of the first thing to say, here are your key questions, discern the answer to these questions as fast as you can. Okay. To see if they're a qualified lead. If they fit into this category, do this. If they fit this, do this. Don't scan their lead unless blah, blah, blah. And so we kind of have a pretty clear kind of standard operating. I guess we just kind of have an SOP for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. One of the challenges is, how do you show up in promotional packages every year? You know, when we get a 20 by 20, there's the option of, do you want the gold sponsorship? Do you want the platinum? Do you want signage? Do you want all this? And we played around with every possible combination. And so that's just a thing to decide. Does the sponsorship serve your goals? We thought it was pretty cool to have a big sign with Next Element on it the first year out in the middle of the lobby. Did it bring any leads? No. I think it did brand awareness. I'm not sure how you can measure that until about the third or fourth year. Booth size and location. We're convinced that a 20 by 20 is exponentially more effective than a 10 by 10 or a 10 by 20. I don't think we'd ever get anything smaller, simply because the island style brings people in from every angle and it creates this incredible space energy. That's kind of just our thing.
Our island booth location, the physicality of it was fantastic. With the three on the one, it just was much bigger than we would normally have thought we could afford.
Yeah.
But the visibility factor was massive. And
yeah,
of the negatives, that was one of the positives.
We know our location, you know, a year in advance after we pick it. So we do a lot of modeling. Like we'll set up like 1/5 or 1/10 size models and you know, kind of start to anticipate where the traffic's going to come from and how flow is going to happen and where food is. And, you know, every year is different, but next year we're going back to Denver, which we've been to before. So we actually know it. And that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To get to those ice creams.
Yeah. There's a great brewery across the street. I want to, any of you that like IPAs, I have a drink I want to buy you in Denver.
All right, that's a deal.
Might be enough to get me there.
Yeah. We kind of have a philosophy that we won't exhibit unless we can present. Also, it's a 1-2 punch that seems to have a lot of power for us. And so in years where we weren't confident that we would get a workshop accepted, we would pay for the sponsorship option to have a paid workshop. It's called a solution session. And you know, it's kind of illegitimate because you have to pay for it, but at least we get to have a workshop. And then we try to schedule that workshop near this last third of the conference so we have time to promote it and then time to reap the rewards when people come back to our booth afterwards. And that seems to be a really good, it plays into our pre-show strategy as well.
That's awesome. I didn't even know you could do that. We apply for workshops, speaking slots every year. And if you get them, it's much, much better.
It's really hard. And it's not that expensive to buy the solution session option if you have a 20 by 20 booth. We have found it's very, very much worth it.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. So is that like a regular workshop that's in the plenary session out there?
Well, it's no, they have them at like 4:30 in the afternoon. And it's identified as a solution session. So people know they're coming to a session that's allowing a little bit more sales. But okay. Yet,
is it down on the expo floor?
No. It's in a workshop room, just like everybody else. They treat you just like another presenter.
Okay.
Yeah, we got some great leads from ours this year.
That's fantastic. Good. That's a good tip.
What's nice is you can use it to demo your product. And as long as attendees feel like they got a little thing they can take home, they don't complain because you paid to do the workshop and they knew that coming in.
Yeah.
As for pre-show strategies, we just always sift through the sponsorship opportunities and try to figure out which one is going to advance our goals. We leverage our mailing list ahead of time. We now have 4 years of collective ATD leads that we've been nurturing, and that helps. But one of the things we do ahead of time is we start about 5 months out notifying everybody that we've talked to before at ATD to see if they're going to be there, see if they want to talk, see if they're coming. And that starts to generate energy because we can then start building up to priming the pump so that when they show up, a lot of people that came to our booth this year, they already were ready for the conversation. They knew what we were about. They knew we had workshops. They had been talking. They'd been receiving our mailings. I think, Terry, you'd appreciate this. We've been working with that lead for quite a while. So when they showed up at our booth, they were ready to talk. And that helped.
Yeah, that's warm.
Plus the pre-show strategy, if you are going to give anything away or do kind of a promotion or anything like that, that gives you time to get people excited about it. And it also helps establish expectations about why we are here as an exhibitor and what we're looking for. I think sometimes exhibitors aren't brash enough or just clear enough to say, we're here looking for sales partners. We're here looking for companies that want this. And we're not for everyone.
Yeah.
We've tried to make a big deal about linking our product somehow to the conference theme or to the keynotes. This year it was really easy for us because Oprah and Seth Godin were the keynotes and we use them all the time in our work. And so trying to find that connection is great because different people draw, like the year that Obama spoke, it changed the makeup of the audience there that year. And when Oprah is there, it changes the makeup. And so we kind of try to adapt to that and figure out if people like Oprah, then what can connect them to our product? Or Seth Godin. So like after Oprah's talk and after Seth Godin's talk, we were doing videos, posting live videos on Facebook where we were connecting the message of that workshop to our product. And that was kind of fun. I don't know if it generated anything, but it was fun. Yeah.
If you're not having fun, nobody else is.
Right? Yeah. We did all that. We about covered all the stuff, that the different topics. Oh, booth design. Working the Z, there's kind of a best practice about people. When people are walking to, the way they scan a booth is they go in a Z fashion. They start at the top, go across, diagonal down, and then across again. And so we try to design our booth to follow that. And that's what we've tried to do. And people, you can see people doing that. And that they usually will make a decision by the time they get done with the Z, whether they're going to walk in or not. And so we try to design our booth to make everything happen in that Z.
The first year we exhibited way back in Chicago, we had no clue what we were doing. And we all thought we were a bunch of designers. So we designed this completely by accident, this backdrop. It was a 10 by 20, just a linear one. And it was almost pure white with a few logos scattered over it. And because it was so different to every other visual monstrosity up and down it kind of pulled people in almost by its lack of structure, lack of busyness, and
it's novelty.
I don't understand the logic, but I'm sure there's something in that.
Did you any of you see there was a 10 by 20 booth? It was all black carpet, black background, and it had a table, and on the table was a bottle of whiskey.
I did not see that.
And that was it. That was it. There were three people there. There was a round table, a bottle of whiskey, and a lucky draw thing. And they were from they were based out of Ireland. And so it was just this total minimalistic. Someone's going to walk away with this bottle of whiskey. And that was how they started the conversation.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they were selling, but I remembered that.
Yeah.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
But it made me think that if, you know, another way of doing a conference, especially for one that maybe I don't have as many resources, or, you know, it's something a little bit smaller, just getting a black, you know, an all black backdrop, a single table, and just sticking my box on it. And just having that box sit there and nothing else but that. And you know, I could put that in my backpack, show up, boonk, and there's the conversation starter. So something simple,
yeah,
for things.
Well, and memorable and effective is much better than just memorable.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's I think the challenge with being novel is you can be memorable, and if people don't remember the product or can't connect what happened with something that matters to them, it's tough. So maybe there's that magic connection, like with your box, that could work.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's kind of what this year we've really changed our strategy for follow-up, and we're having incredible success. We made a commitment not to talk to anybody until 4 weeks out. And
oh, wow.
Unless they asked for it before that. And so the only thing we would do before that is to maybe connect with them on LinkedIn, invite a connection, but that's it. And we kind of had a little principle that first we would just make a connection, LinkedIn. The next thing is we would give them something. And then the third one, we would only start to talk about business if they had asked for it. And otherwise, we would give them something more. And we would wait till the fourth reciprocated interaction before we would start talking turkey and saying, you know, how about, and it is working so good. In probably half of my leads that I'm responsible for, the prospect is actually initiating the conversation before I do.
That's brilliant.
But it requires a lot of patience, and we've just been really happy with how it's working.
Can I ask, what are some of the things that you give?
For us, it's we give like content, like an article showing, like a how-to article, or a video showing how to use our product in a way that solves a problem for them, or just connecting them with a resource that we heard about that we thought they'd be interested in.
Mm.
Do you run any demos or anything like that as an offering?
We offered two live video demos that they could sign up for post ATD, and we had some takers. Mm-hmm.
That's what you're thinking of doing, Jimbo, is it right?
Yeah, I've got, which I'd be happy to send an invite to any of you guys too. I'm doing one on July 10th. I think we've got maybe seven, eight people signed up. I'll actually be doing it from the Great Wall. So,
oh, cool.
I mean, not actually physically on the wall. I'm right next to it, but I'll be up in like a little hut in Beijing. Outside. Yeah. And
we were surprised how well the demo concept worked. Like, say somebody would come to our booth and they'd say, oh man, I'd really like to share this with my head of training, or I'd like to share this with my VP. Mm. And we'd say, would you like us to schedule a demo? And people were taking us up on it and actually doing that. And in some cases, they wouldn't even sign up for our public demo. They would say, you know, we have four or five people representing different divisions around the world. Can you schedule a specific one just for us? We, of course, be delighted to do that. So this is the first year we've ever done the demo concept, and it's, we're really enjoying it.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. I have follow through on agreements. We want to have a lot of integrity, and part of our whole brand, product brand, is compassion and authenticity and genuineness and real relationships. So if we agree we're not going to call the person for 4 weeks, we're not going to do it. If we said that we're going to wait 6 months until their budget cycle, we're going to wait. And so we're just trying to be, just establish that very trusting kind of above board kind of a thing with people. I don't know what else there is. Yeah, patience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. And large companies, you know, it's,
but
we've been warned.
Say that last point out loud for those who would just be listening to this.
I'm sorry? Oh, two to three year conversion is not unusual. We're starting to see conversion rates now for our 2016 and 17 ATD conferences. Yeah. So that's helpful. What we're finding, though, and we were warned about this, is that departments, it's often easy for a lead within a department to kind of use some discretionary budget and bring us in for a gig that seems pretty good, but it fizzles quickly if they don't have higher level support. And so it takes 2 to 3 years to really convert to where it becomes more of a cultural initiative within a company versus just some departments, you know, whim.
Yeah, and we've had situations, if I can just throw this in there, that we would get a good lead, we would begin to develop a relationship, budget constraints, things look like it was going to happen in the first year, it moves into the second year, and then we might get, as you were saying, Nate, we might get an initial, be brought in from one department, then it can't get traction outside that one initial startup. Or what's happened with us with one occasion, we moved into a large organization. We thought it was going to be great. They put us into their whole leadership and development curriculum. And then there was a big budget cut and our champion left the company. Mm. And so then poof, the whole client just disappears. But then it might take another year, but suddenly that same champion suddenly is with a new company and they've gotten enough traction to where they have leverage and they have the ability to bring us in there. And they were just waiting for that opportunity. So you never know. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Never know.
Yeah, bamboo.
Yeah. We decided not to segment our leads automatically, but instead to make notes in our, we did scan badges, but we also collect cards, and we got scanners because we didn't know how much volume there would be, but we made a lot of personal notes. And then I think it was, it might've been Mark that talked about maybe four categories kind of split down to, and we have campaigns on our email marketing, our CRM system we use Infusionsoft. And we kind of had prepared campaigns that were ready to run for each kind of lead so that we could follow up and say, you had asked for this, so now I'm going to send you information. And it would start working that lead, pushing them through the pipeline. We also had kind of one email we would send to everybody afterwards, and they could self-select what was their area of interest. And then the campaign would automatically work that. But we kind of... It seemed good in theory, and I think if we had higher numbers, it would work, but we decided we had a few enough leads, we could make it personal, and so we did.
Yeah, always better.
Yeah.
I've got a question for you all. What about calling leads just out of the blue? Hey, hi. Met you at ATD.
I love it.
On the telephone. So here's my story. For those of you there, ATD, you might have met Kimmy. Kimmy lives in Hong Kong. She's an American. And so anyone that had a phone number, she just started calling. It's, you know, 10 o'clock at night, Hong Kong, 10 o'clock in the morning there. And she's had some really great conversations, and it's actually led to some really good you know, outcomes. And so far, according to her, nobody's been put off by it. But I was, it's the kind of thing I would never in a million years do myself. But it's people, and again, I'm not listening to her call, so I don't know. But, you know, people seem to be really appreciative, and it's connected her to people that didn't even, you know, click back in on the emails or the campaigns. But I'm just curious where anyone else would stand on this.
Man, we try everything that we possibly can to make a connection, and sometimes calling is the thing. I don't know that we do it first, partly because of some of that, you know, that discomfort, like, oh, what if they answer, or what if they don't remember me, or I don't know what I'm going to say. They're going to, but I tell you what, we do everything from WhatsApp to Facebook to LinkedIn to phones to, it's crazy that how creative we have to get to find the medium that these people want to communicate on. Mm. Yeah.
I had one other surprise. I've had two people that didn't talk to anybody, didn't get scanned, who've just gone to my website and have connected with me. One of them is the head of sales readiness for LinkedIn, about doing a conference. Does anyone else get anyone that's just like, you know, took some information that reach out to you? And because the reason I'm asking this is it makes me think I need to take those little walk-bys a little more seriously, have something, you know, basically just took a name card. And you know, is it good to have something that people can physically take without a conversation?
It probably is. I mean,
I think so.
Yeah. Some people are uncomfortable getting cornered, you know, trapped. Yeah. And they like to grab and go.
I think there are legitimate leads at trade show or legitimate prospects at trade shows like this, and they don't want to do business at the booth. They want to get their information. We had a team from Accenture come, and several of them had already come and picked up stuff and then brought people back. And they came and basically said, our team has been doing all this research, blah, blah, blah. We don't have time right now, but we're interested in your stuff. Can we schedule a demo? And they were off. And they're like our hottest lead right now. So I do think a really good rat card or something very, very simple where they can say, okay, I just want to make a mental note of this. Is key. And some of the people, if they're key decision makers, might be, I don't want to say this, but maybe too important to be strolling the expo for. They come with a specific agenda. They know what they want and they're going back to their sessions.
Yeah. We actually had a couple of people who came to our booth this year who said, I'm actually on the floor. My boss is up in the conferences and I need to, you know, I'm looking for specific. So we asked, you know, what are you specifically looking for? Is there a particular need? Obviously you can't look at everything. So I'm assuming there's something you want. And that was very productive as well. And one of the things we found this year that we started doing 2 years ago, but it really has taken off now. We have both our catalog of products and services in a paper catalog, and we also have it on a thumb drive. And that 2 gig thumb drive is only, you know, where our catalog is only taking a couple hundred megabytes, but they get a free thumb drive with our name, you know, and our logo on it. And this year it was the first time, I think it was probably 80% of people wanted only the thumb drive. Don't give them the catalog, or 90% maybe. Yeah. Whereas normally they take a catalog, but they fill up with that stuff so fast. Most people said, oh, yeah, they'd look a little hem and haw. And we said, well, I can give it on your thumb drive. And they went, oh, perfect. Don't give me anything else.
Yeah. No paper.
When I check out of my hotel room at the end of ATD, I make a mental note of all the crap that I leave on the bed or leave in the trash can that came in my bag. And I look at all of that and I say, remember that next year when you're planning what to give away. Because, and I look at what I actually kept. And it's, I wonder at the end of a show in the hotel rooms there, I bet 90% of what people collected or were given is thrown away.
Yeah. Well, I'll just throw this out there because at one point, Nate, you were talking about on the slide, you know, be careful of what you're, what are you trying to give away? And your sponsorships, you think very hard about what is it that you're, where are you going to put that sponsor effort and expense. And it was one of the things that just struck me a couple of years ago, and I just keep seeing it happening, is, you know, they say, oh, well, you can get some of your swag in the bag that every participant gets. That's the very first stuff that immediately goes in recycling from every single person I've asked.
Yep. Thought, one of our statistics was we did the tote bag insert two years, and then we quit. And one of our statistics was how many tote bags did we fill? And it was about 11,000. How many did we see at our booth? Because our insert was intended to be brought to the booth to claim your prize. So our question was, how many people actually are using it? And I think we got like 75 tote bag inserts out of 11,000.
Wow.
So okay. We didn't do that. We didn't do that again.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And we did the triangle, and it was the only triangle in the booth. And people said, oh, I noticed yours was a triangle. The next year, there was like four triangles. And so we're like, now what are we going to do?
Hey, okay, Nate, as the host, how are we going for time, and how does everyone else feel?
This has been very valuable.
Oh, it's been outstanding. Yeah, I'm just wondering. This
is fantastic. I really, really appreciate it. I should get off in a minute here.
Yeah, I probably should go. It kind of feels like a little, kind of like a lull is approaching.
As Mark mentioned, and I feel it's been outstanding. I think scheduling this 6 months or so out from the next ATD is something that everyone seems to want to do, just as a reminder, if not.
Mm. What if we had I'm curious, how many of you are intending to be at ATD next year?
Jimbo.
I think we're out. I'm not getting traction
I'm curious if we were to meet, maybe we could be a little bit more focused. Like if we were 4 or 5 months out, we could talk about what are our goals and what is our pre-show strategy and are we considering sponsorship? Like talk about those things that really need to be talked about at that point.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, I'll take on the responsibility of starting that conversation to start happening. And then whoever wants to get on it and how we structure it, we'll figure that out at the time. Yeah.
And the great thing is we'll also be maybe 9 months post ATD and we can talk about how our leads are translating and how our strategies worked last time.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I was thinking, you were just talking there, Nate, and it brought up this sort of image of whether we're there or not doesn't matter, but it'd be fantastic. You have a really good conversation with someone and then they almost want to ask you, who else should we talk to? And it'd be great to give them a roadmap.
Yep.
Here's some really interesting things. You want to put a box on your head? Go and see Jimbo.
I love it.
Something like that.
I don't put boxes on people's heads. I take them off.
But they're surrounded by crazy static. If you could just give them some, like, here's some 5 or 6 places to go. You may or may not buy, but it'll be high value for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly learned a lot. Thank you for all the sharing and for going along with this outline and letting us jump around and
just super helpful.
I've loved it, mate. Thank you very much.